let's start the show now.
Picture this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
Mary Whitehouse Experience. Hello. This week, plans are put to the FA about the formation of a football super league to be phased in over 2 years. In its first year, the Super League will consist of the top six English teams and the top four Scottish teams.
And in its second year, the Scottish teams will form the Super League Division 2. I'm David Bedil, this is Rob Newman, and this is Punt and Dennis.
This week saw the increasing likelihood of war in the Gulf, more major splits between Britain and Europe, and more important than either of these, the life and death question of dog registration.
Yes, if you really want to stir up feeling among the British, it's always animals that do it. We are famously a nation of animal lovers. This despite the fact that we haven't got any really good animals. We've got nothing remotely dangerous. America has alligators and rattlesnakes. Australia has funnel web spiders. India has tigers and cobras. Britain has the adder. And that's about it. Unless you want to count wasps.
Now, most other countries have dangerous animals in the wild and keep nice, friendly animals as pets. In Britain, it's exactly the opposite. In the wild, in Britain, the most you're likely to encounter is a field mouse or a slightly grumpy squirrel. But going to people's homes and you get savaged by Rottweilers and pit bulls.
As they've now broken through in the Channel Tunnel, worries about rabies are likely to increase. The government say there's no danger from this horrible disease which makes people gibber and foam at the mouth. A Labour spokesman replied,
"This is absolutely typical of what we can expect from this country, isn't it?"
Now, there are, of course, thankfully, there are exceptions to the British fear of exotic animals.
Here, in the rainforest of Upper Borneo, we can see this rare and beautiful hooded lizard. I don't want to touch it. It's all scaly. It's yucky. Can we go back to the monorail ride now? And can I have an ice cream?
Our attitude to animals is strangest when it comes to eating them. The British are quite happy to eat pigs, but not horses. Arabs will not eat pigs, but they will eat sheep's eyes. And the French will eat anything. Why? Why are we so willing to eat pork, but not horse meat? Well, it must be cultural conditioning. If we saw pigs the way we saw horses, it might be different. If we'd grown up watching Pink Beauty every week. If there was a Royal Pig of the Year show. If the Lone Ranger had ridden round on a huge porker instead of a sort of equine page three girl, then we might think differently.
Nevertheless, a lot of British visitors are shocked when they discover that it's quite common in France to find restaurants which specialise in horse meat.
Waiter? What do you recommend from this menu?
Well, sir, I recommend pepper steak trained by Gaston Leroux and by Emily Leclerc. The going is good to medium rare, chump chop worth the risk of the current price, and of course, T-bone steak, today's favourite.
Yes, Yeah, I'm in a bit of a hurry. How long will they take to cook?
Pepper steak ready at 10-1, T-bone at 5-1, and then away onto the grill. Chump chop on the left, sausages to the right, and as they cover to the first turn, in goes the spatula. My goodness, T-bone has fallen at the first turn in the Queen Elizabeth handicap stakes. And now, at the second turn, it's sausages. Sausages have been sitting in the larder for nearly 3 weeks, and they're off.
There can be no doubt that we are brought up with a very cosy image of the animal world. Who knows what effect it might have on children's perceptions if all those cuddly cartoon animals actually behaved a bit more like the real thing.
Up is the devil, up is the devil. I hope you like the dead bird I left mangled with its entrails all over your doorstep. Give me another bowl of that Whiskers super meat. I'll go and lie in the sofa for 4 hours and leave hairs all over it.
Gee, T.C., you've got great lumps of fur missing from that fight you had with Cho-Cho.
Hurry it up, hurry it up, hurry, hurry. I've got to stick up a fur ball on the carpet.
Like
like, okay, Scoob, I'm going to let you have your lead, Scooby.
Okay.
You want a Scooby snack?
No, I want to go and sniff round the back of that Labrador.
Now, despite these sorts of experiences, millions of people love owning pets. Now, at least dogs and cats get out and about a bit. Other pets just sit there. Rodents, generally, are rubbish pets. They look cute, but they're basically very dull, as David Frost discovered when they had a hamster as a mystery guest on Through the Keyhole.
Well, David, whoever lives here clearly enough, they'll torn up bits of newspaper that they can dump in. And just look at this plastic wheel. You could run around this for hours and look really stupid. Over here are some fascinating old vegetable peelings and a big trough to drink out of. So, who lives in a cage like this?
The answer, of course, George Best.
Now the fireworks experience. Now, firstly, obviously, if you are going to have a bonfire night, always obey the fireworks code.
1. Light the blue touch paper and retire to a safe distance. 2. Watch the firework go... 3. Think, shall I obey the fireworks code? 4. Think, nah, that rocket cost me £2. 5. Go back to rocket, pour some petrol over it, sit on it, relight it and say,
now, who's going to host? Jim will fix it now.
The real fireworks code is, after all, ridiculous. If you're not allowed to go back to a firework that doesn't go off, then you have to have an unexploded rocket in your back garden for the rest of your life. And you never know when it's going to go off.
Another odd regulation of the fireworks code is, always hold fireworks at arm's length. Well, call me overzealous, but I think that's a pretty stupid thing to do with a Catherine wheel. The Catherine wheel, incidentally, is named after a medieval form of execution whereby you were tied naked to the outside of a wheel and rolled down a hill. Apparently, a lot of the medieval condemned opted for this on the basis that if you're going to be executed, you might as well have a laugh.
Some people feel that the historic significance of November the 5th has been lost in the modern commercialisation of Bonfire Night. But in actual fact, there are some links that remain between the firework galas of today and the original Catholic conspiracy of 1605.
So, Fox, King James and his parliament sit above these vaults. Have brought all we need?
Yes.
Then set a match to it.
Oh, these sparklers are ace. Look, I can write my name with it. Oh, no, it doesn't quite work.
Oh, God, this jacket potato just isn't cooked.
Now, Catesby has to make sure that all your pets are indoors.
Don't say we should have gone to the one at the wreck.
The plot was foiled by the government because Guy Fawkes was spotted at the gates of Parliament by a guard, whose suspicions were apparently first aroused on seeing a man who was 2 feet high, made of an old pillow, with a balloon for a head.
Fawkes was also perhaps the only man in the 17th century to wear an Arsenal scarf, an old pair of his dad's corduroy trousers, and travel on a wooden go-kart. He made his living from sitting outside Presto's with a badly balanced McDonald's cup propped against his leg, and he was quite different from every other member of the Catholic Anti-Parliament Alliance, who were all hard seven-year-olds.
Still, the fact remains that Guy Fawkes Night celebrates and commemorates a terrorist act, an attempt to blow up the government. So sometime in the future, are we going to be celebrating the Brighton bombing? It'll become customary every 17th of October to smash up a hotel, which may at least explain the behaviour of the young Conservatives.
Indoor fireworks, though, are completely brilliant, right, and should, we think, be used instead of the normal ones at big firework events like the Queen's birthday.
And the crowd gathered here at Waterloo Bridge are absolutely awestruck at this wonderful display. Look at that. A little black pill has kind of frothed up to look like a joke turd. And now I can see the team of 75 marshals are about to set off the grey one that curls round a bit and then smells nasty. Oh no, that one hasn't quite worked. Or perhaps it has. It's very, very difficult to tell. And now the pièce de résistance, the piece of charcoal which, when you put a match to it, catches fire. All in all, a marvellous display, well worth the £250,000 played by the City of London to the event organiser, Terry Catton.
Oh,
Now it's the punchline experience. Studio audience were asked to come up to, with a punchline to this joke. This week, the two ends of the Channel Tunnel met in the middle. What were the first words exchanged between the French digger and the British digger, or vice versa? I've got the first one here. Any other nationality, and I would have shaken your hand, you slimy, froggy bastard. That's from a Mr. Nicholas Ridley. Trick or treat. That's from George the Cosmic Pink Frog. What a sad man. Oh, what a sad woman.
I like this, but is that a hard EQ or are you just pleased to see me? Does anyone actually know what a hard EQ is here? Is it like an emu, except harder? I
mean, Rod Howell.
We'd like to buy some chickens for Tesco. It's based on the Tesco advert, Rob, with Dudley Moore in it.
All right.
So much for you knowing all about popular culture. Oh, do shut up! In the front row. God, I will show them what you look like. Boo? I've kept this one in because I think it was in a Punch cartoon in 1834. Typical British, always digging in the opposite direction to the rest of Europe. And that's from Chris Lowe. Well,
it's quite one of the Pet Shop Boys, isn't it? A worthy point, Chris, made in an entirely unfunny way. Thank you. Oh dear, oh dear. Le French. Bonjour. The Brit. Here, Bert, what's he talking about? That's from Steve Randall, who's the man over there wearing the ARP Warden's hat.
Let's have a cheer, first of all, for Steve Randall, who did the Bonjour, Earbert, what's he talking about, Steve Randall? Versus, is that a hard EQ or are you just pleased to see me, by Mark Brandt. Mark Brandt wins. Round for Mark Brandt, wherever he is.
One more round of applause for Mark
Brett. Big ears, what time is it?
And now, the death experience. Death comes to us all, but fortunately most of us will avoid the indignity of having an obituary on the news.
And finally tonight, Tony McNocketty, the actor whose face became known to millions as Ron Scribble in the Wimsdale Diaries, has, as I'm sure you've all gathered by now from the number of subclauses in this sentence, and the fact that my voice drops at the end of each of them, just before each comma on the autocue, died, age 74. You knew it was coming. Why else would an actor's face pop up on the little screen behind me? It is usually a graph or a picture of John Major. Our arts correspondent has been desperately rummaging around for some good clips.
Of course, you may well wonder how they managed to put those tributes together so quickly. Well, the answer is that they've actually got them all done well in advance. It's true, you may not be aware that the BBC has a special obituaries department, known within the BBC as the Department of Stiffs, they have obituaries ready and waiting for hundreds of famous people who look ready to drop off the perch. It sounds sick, but it's only common sense. But what a place to work. I mean, how do they get any job satisfaction?
It's nearly 5:30.
Looks like nobody's going today, then.
What about Sir Harold What's-His-Name?
No, he's comfortable in hospital.
Oh, blast. Are you sure?
Yep.
Hello? President Gorbachev's been assassinated!
Why?
No, I'm only joking, he's fine.
Oh.
It's just Alan wondering if we're going for a drink.
We could kill Alan.
Of course, all obituaries and so on are based around that fundamental law of civilization that you should never speak ill of the dead. It doesn't matter how much someone is slagged off in life, it has to stop when they die. Does this mean that at the end of World War II, everyone was going around saying,
"Oh, you know, I mean, Adolf, he was forthright. He always spoke his mind, you know, he knew what he wanted and he was never one to hold back." I liked him, actually.
Jim Davidson there. There is a whole hidden code of euphemisms that tend to be employed in obituaries.
Those who knew Jeremy will remember him for his acerbic wit, his hard-headed style of management, never one to suffer fools gladly, and his unwillingness to be diverted from the task at hand.
Jeremy was a blinked, inflexible, grumpy bastard.
He liked to live life to the full.
He got pissed a lot.
While not conventionally handsome...
Ugly.
Something of a ladies' man, he was three times married.
A randy sexist, he was grossly unpleasant to live with.
All those of us who knew and liked him...
Me. And I'm being paid for this.
...will miss him sorely.
What was his name again? Of course, the media have to be very careful how they treat bereavements, according to the deceased, all official decorum. This is a shame, really, as the media ought to reflect the way the public see things.
And finally tonight, Tony McNockety, you know that bloke who was watching in thingy, has snuffed it. Gosh, I didn't know he was still alive. I thought he'd pegged out years ago. I bet he left a tidy packet. I wonder what he died of. Well, you have to wonder...
And now, the sleep experience. I myself am an insomniac. To get to sleep at all, I have to wear a blindfold and earplugs. Trouble is, I keep dreaming I'm Bernie the Bolt.
Left a bit, right a bit, left a bit.
The voice there of Mrs. Stevie Wonder. Insomnia is a terrible affliction. It is the only disease which involves all-night domination of the mind by a five-second tape loop of whatever is number 17 in the chart. And you have to put up with other people telling you that they always fall asleep as soon as they get into bed. You know the sort of people. Henry Kelly's wife. Derek Jameson's wife. Prince Charles. One of the major problems with sleep is that if you come home late and someone else is asleep, you find the volume has been turned up on your house. Especially if you're coming home to your parents' house with somebody you've just met.
Shh! Quiet!
Then you make the mistake of doing everything slowly, so it just makes the noise for longer.
Okay, let's go in. Damn it, why do I always tread on the cat? I just turn the light on. Sorry, I've turned on the elephant. As Valerie Singleton once said. Let's take our shoes off. Oh, God, I think I've woken up my parents.
Is that you, Charles?
The papers have recently said a lot about Charles and Di's sleeping arrangements. Does this mean that Charles has to spend a lot of time trying not to think about sex? Well, it's interesting that the things the King-in-Waiting always talks about read exactly like a list of the peculiarly non-sexual things you think about to delay the moment of orgasm.
Architecture. the environment. The goons. Lord Mountbatten. Lord Mountbottom. Oh, no, no.
I couldn't believe it was happening. sleep for most people, although not everyone, involves dreaming. Belinda Carlisle says we dream the same dream, but I can't believe that every night Belinda Carlisle has a wet dream about Wilma Flintstone. Not that I do, or anything.
Back to the correspondence experience. Now, last week, we asked our listeners to write in to Michael Rodd, Was My Babysitter, and tell us their anecdotes about their encounters with celebrities.
Now, we've had literally 20 or 30 responses to this. From all four corners of Essex.
Yes, a lot of people from Essex, for some reason, wrote into this. And we're going to read out some of the letters that we got in to the show this week. The first one is from a bloke in Middlesbrough called John Buxton. And he says, I have the Grumbleweeds autograph. What a sad man.
From Zoe Hill of Cardiff. My claim to fame is that my dad met the man whose daughter is married to Jimmy Greaves' son.
What a very interesting person. You must be Zoe Hill.
Now, this person wrote this phenomenally long, four chapters here, from Hatfield near Doncaster in South Yorkshire, Caroline. And she's had about 10 encounters with celebrities, of which number three is, in 1986, I had a letter printed on Channel 4 teletext. PPPS. My mum uses wash and go. But she still takes two bottles into the shower. The other one is full of gin.
Now, Yvonne of Halifax writes, I've never met a celebrity close-up, but I did once swear and make obscene hand gestures out of a bus window at Les Dennis. He must be an even bigger dickhead than I first thought, because he thought I was waving at him. And he smiled and waved back.
That's a lovely story. Dear the Mary Whitehouse Experience, I would like to tell you about the time I met a celebrity, but catchphrase is just starting, I must go.
And finally, a letter from Gary Smith of Thetford in Norfolk. The Burger King advert shows a soldier getting out of his bunk and produces a toasting fork, puts on his sunglasses and goes out onto a flight deck. He is then handed a plate, and on it is an uncooked burger. He then stands and puts the burger on his toasting fork and stands behind a jet about to take off. He then comes back into picture with a black face and the burger in a bun, cooked with lettuce, relish, and all the trimmings. What I'd like to know is, where the hell did he get the bun? Or do jet fighters always kick out sesame seed buns on takeoff?
This, I think, has given us our subject.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
If any more listeners have noticed irritating things about commercials, any adverts that annoy you, then write in to the Mary Whitehouse Experience and tell us about them. Please write to
They Wouldn't Have Let That Motorbike Past Reception, the Mary Whitehouse Experience. BBC Broadcasting House, London, W1A1AA. That's They Wouldn't Have Let That Motorbike Pass Reception. The Mary Whitehouse Experience, BBC Broadcasting House, London, W1A1AA.
This. Because when you were a kid, teachers con you and they say they want you to be original, because they don't. Because if you stand out, that's extra work for them. Like, the English teacher said to us once, do a really original English project. And I thought I'd done a really original thing when I rewrote the British alphabet in a different order. Because I thought, that's completely original and nobody's ever done it. And I still remember it. I can still do it. CUTFEQPYAJGBVRKIZWHMXNS. The math teacher, similarly unimpressed with my numbers 1 to million reordered. I'll do that for you now. I was thinking about myself when I was 7. In 1967, when I was 7, Che Guevara was killed fighting in Bolivia, fighting broke out in the Middle East, and colour television began on BBC Two. I was 7, we didn't have a colour television, I had a Quality Street wrapper over each eye, basically. When you're 7, you're weird, you're a weird creature. That is the only age where you're going to wake up in the morning and think, chocolate, straight away, no cup of tea. All day without a cup of tea. You're weird. Are you talking about fashion? That your fashion is completely to pot when you're 7, because you think it's quite fashionable to walk around all day with one sock hanging right off the end of your foot, a pen top sucked onto your lip, and a handkerchief stuffed up your nose. And I remember when I discovered my father's shaving bag and my mother's makeup bag on the same day, I was upstairs for a long time, covered in cuts and lipstick and scared to come down. Then you hear the terrible cry, come on down, Mark, your auntie and cousins are here. Oh, God. Like Jack Nicholson playing the Joker, like, when'll they get a load of me? You have to go down. They usually send you out to play because you're making too much mess, and I would hang around on the corner with my little boy friends and we would compare action transfers, which we had a peach on, like some horrendous skin disease. No skin on the roof of our mouth because we had a whole quarter of pineapple chunks, one after the other. Then, when we had a great big mouth full of fruity gob, we'd do a long thick spit and suck it back up before it gets to the floor.
Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Oh, I say.
Ladies and gentlemen, the programme you have just listened to was recorded on Wednesday, the 31st of October. I'm now speaking to you live on Saturday, and I have to tell you that the Mary Whitehouse Experience has gone into hiding. Last week, we finally went too far. We insulted one of the most fearsome people alive today. Terry Marsh, The Ayatollah Khomeini? No, worse than that. Without thinking of the consequences, we stupidly, stupidly suggested that Beagle Sassoon is a smarmy ponce.
Hey, what? I think you've done it again.
Oh, God, no.
Anyway, following last week's show, we had a complaint from Beagle Sassoon's PR company. He's on to us, so we've gone into hiding.
Hello, boys. I've just up down to the shops to get a paper. Do you want anything?
No, it's all right, Mr. Rushdie.
The thing is, so once Beagle's gore is up, he's a desperate man.
Like, one thing that's definitely out for us all now is a haircut. And, for example, Steve here...
Hello.
...hasn't had a haircut since 1974.
75, when I bought my last set of clothes.
Yeah. Well, he can do terrible things when you cross him, right? Other people I know got on the wrong side of him include Arthur Scargill, Chris Waddle, and Van Gogh.
He packs a razor too. I know this bloke who went in for a shave and, well, now he's the fat git with the sideburns who does the racing on Channel 4. Yeah. He's a killer, isn't he?
What's his name?
Mr. Fat Git. Yeah. I've heard he's taking us to court.
What, John McCririck?
No, that's next week. Beagle Sassoon. Luckily, we've got Petrocelli on our side.
Call Beagle Sassoon. Call Beagle Sassoon. Call Beagle Sassoon.
Look, can we get some other people to work in this courtroom? Not since it was written in 1945.
Right.
Give me another go, Dave.
No, you're sacked. Right. Approach the witness stand. Name?
Vidal. Sassoon.
Occupation?
Hairdresser.
Counsel for the prosecution, Your Honor.
Mr. Sassoon, have you ever in any way displayed any smarminess or pontiness?
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Counsel for the defense may cross-examine.
Mr. Sassoon, I must say you've been very impressive so far, and it looks like we may have to admit that my client's accusations were unfounded, scandalous, and... Oh, excuse me, I've been having a terrible problem recently with my split ends.
Oh, well, honky chokes, why didn't you say? What you want is my new apple pond cream rinse and...
Oh, bugger. What a giveaway.
I rest my case.
Yeah, but Beadle's not going to wait for the courts to sort it out. You know all those pictures barbers put up on the wall of, like, Algerian men with bouffants, yeah? They're his gang. They're Beadle's boys.
Yeah. You know that one of the bloke with the flared collar and the light perm? That's Tony the Knife.
Oh, no.
And that one of the bloke with the moustache and the sideburns who's looking up at, like, a funny angle?
Yeah.
That's Engelbert Humperdinck.
Please release me.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Humperdinck. Thank you, yes. Next.
Good. Good. Should have used some thicker toilet paper.
Good night.
You have been listening to the Mary White House Experience. It was written and performed by...
David Baddiel, bit of a bird's nest. Rob Newman, lovely thick mop. Steve Punchard, show his ears. He's got lovely ears. Hugh Dennis is a bit severe, but keep it layered. And Mark Hurst, he quite often wears a hat. The producer was...
Armando Iannucci.